Today on Movie Rollers, we review Suffragette, Legend, and Brooklyn. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And here's D as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Good evening.
So we're doing quick fire recordings today, just getting caught up on a dearth of, complete glut of movies that we've been watching. And there's some movies that we aren't even going to be able to get to review. Trumbo, Creed, these are...
Spotlight.
These are all movies that have just been coming out.
A pigeon sat on a branch and contemplated life.
Existence.
Existence, even.
Yes.
Life existence.
But we'll catch up on those.
Yeah, we will need to do some kind of end-of-year roundup because, again, a quick plug for Creed because I like that one a lot. we should definitely catch up on things that we haven't seen, but... today's episode, before we get into the review, we want to do our usual segment of I can't find anything on Netflix and just give you a couple of Netflix picks for this week. So, Yazdi, you have a Netflix pick?
I do. I have an Indian movie to recommend this time, and it's by one of my favorite Indian directors. His name is Imtiaz Ali, and this was the movie which put him on the map. And it's an absolute delight of a movie. If you've never watched an Indian movie before, this is a good one, I think, to get your toe in the water. It's called Jab We Met. And Jab is the word in Hindi for when. So essentially the title of the movie is When We Met, but the first word is the Hindi word, which is Jab, J-A-B. So it's Jab We Met. And it's just Indian cinema done right. It's got a wonderful story. It's got two characters who are very well fleshed out. And it's about new India versus old India. It's got a great script. It's got remarkable musical numbers, a great score. And those two leads, they just light up the screen. But I think ultimately it comes down to the writing in this movie. And this director writes most of his movies. And it's quite something else. So I would strongly recommend Jab We Met.
And Jab is spelt J-A-B.
Correct.
So Jab We Met to us non-Indians.
Yes. Jab.
But just so that you know what to look for.
Yes.
And Yazdi, I agree with your recommendation. It is a beautiful movie. And I don't often watch a lot of Indian movies. Joe, I think you even watched this in the background when I had it on.
Yeah.
Very beautiful. Yes. So my recommendation is, it's called Kumare, The Story of a False Prophet. It's a documentary, and it's more of those kind of an experiment type documentary. So basically, this guy decides that he is going to dress up as a yogi master kind of chap, and it's set in California mainly, and he convinces people that he's a prophet and sees if people will follow him. So it's very comical to start off with, but it goes deep. It's a really interesting dialogue on what you believe, right? So if you believe something, does that make it real? Brilliant documentary.
This was actually in contention a couple of years ago.
Correct.
And I remember watching one of the screeners for it. It's fun. It's almost like a performance piece.
It really is very interesting. Yeah.
And my recommendation, I was struggling because, Rashmi, that was the one I was going to talk about.
Really?
Yeah, that was...
That's why you were smiling.
Reason,
oh.
Yeah, it's popped up here on our Netflix Watch It Again list. Have we spoken about Print the Legend?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I need to keep... there's so much here. I'm going to recommend a Quentin Tarantino movie, Django Unchained, only because Quentin Tarantino is in the brain. We did watch the advanced screening of The Hateful Eight, which we can't talk about until December 21st. So no spoilers or opinions on that one yet. But Django Unchained, that was his last movie. That was the seventh movie by Quentin Tarantino, as he very much likes to put in his opening credits. Terrific performances there by... in particular, you know, the Samuel L. Jackson character, I think he was nominated for that, I hope. Was he not?
No.
Because that was Leonardo
DiCaprio.
And Leo DiCaprio
was nominated.
But yeah, that's a very fun movie, a very dark take on the whole, a very Tarantino-esque take it on is, the whole, you know, slavery era. So if you're a fan, you'll love it. And it's out on Netflix. So another a quick off-the-cuff recommendation there from me. Okay, let's move into our reviews of the week. So we have Suffragette, Legend, and Brooklyn. We start with Suffragette.
Let's.
So Suffragette.
It's a person who refuses to accept the status quo.
Is that what it means?
Yes.
Interesting, because we, in England, we learned a lot about suffragettes growing up because they were very much the Burn Your Bra Brigade, we used to call them. And I think that's what this movie is about. It's directed by Sarah Gavron and stars Carey Mulligan, Helena Bonham Carter, Meryl Streep, Brendan Gleeson, the huge cast here. And very briefly, the film is about about the women who were willing to lose everything in their fight for equality in early 20th century Britain. So the whole suffragette movement, I think, is, you know, well, it's not quite a verb, but in England, again, growing up, we learned lots about these women and they really did make a huge change to the world. So this is one that I was really wanting to see. I'm a huge fan of Carey Mulligan's work. So, guys, what did you think of Suffragette?
So this is a very well-intentioned movie, which is beautifully acted, very exquisitely made in terms of the period details. It has its heart in the right place. But I don't know what went wrong. It did not move anything within me. I came out of the movie completely unmoved. It almost played like a reel on the side. And this is a very strong story. This is a story about a person who has to go through a lot. And I don't know, it's voodoo. Some stuff just all gets into your heart, like Room just got in my heart and it's still in my heart. And this movie completely failed to move me. So I don't know what it is. It's very well made. It's very well intentioned, very serviceable, but it didn't do much for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm surprised to hear you say that, Yazdi. I mean, I say, you know, thanks to the suffragette movement back in the 1900s, women have a voice and, more importantly, a vote in most of the West. And I think it's a really important story that people need to know about. And I'm happy to say that I really enjoyed this. And I wasn't actually looking forward to this because I didn't like the look of it when we were looking at the trailers or seeing the posters come out. And the title is a little bit, you know, it's a movement. So I wasn't sure that I was really looking forward to watching this one, but I think this is well worth a viewing. So, Yazdi, I'm wondering whether you thought maybe it was too clinical in the way that it was put together.
It was because, you know, I mean,
because it's pretty flawless.
It's just perfectly put together in terms of the craft.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there was ever any doubt, I'm one of the world's biggest fans of Carey Mulligan. I mean, she can do no wrong. I mean, Far From the Madding Crowd is going to be on my list of the best movies of the year. So I don't know. There was something about how it all played out. It just maybe, yeah, there was something sterile about it. There was something.
Is this sexist Yazdi coming out?
I don't know. I don't know. Possibly. But, no. You know, there is, like, she goes through a lot.
Mm-hmm.
She goes through a lot, but I never kind of, you know, I didn't have like something stuck in my throat, or it just felt like there was a detachment from what was happening in the screen. Maybe I was just having a bad day. Joe, were you having a good day when you watched it?
No,
I haven't seen
it.
Oh, no, you haven't
we,
seen
we
it.
We do have
okay.
it downstairs. It was one of the screeners that we have for promotional consideration. So I do have it on my list to watch. Just haven't found the time to do so. But
and it's, go on. I mean, it's about really amazing concepts. It's about, you know, you can be well-intentioned and you can look at parallels right now. You know, there's a lot of debate going on about gun control in the U.S. right now, for example. But if there is an issue which needs to be changed for the betterment of the society, it's one thing to say, yeah, I support it. But it's quite another thing to stand up to bat and stick your neck out. And very often the people who elicit change are people who either voluntarily or don't have a choice to stick their neck out. And then they have to pay a big price, not just for themselves, but at a personal level with their families. And so, you know, that kind of is highlighted in this movie pretty well. And then the other piece, and I'll let you talk about the other piece, which is just really one of my favorite philosophical concepts, is when is violence justified? You know, if you believe in a cause enough, are you willing to be violent to get yourself heard? Or if you're fighting somebody else at the opposing end of a moral issue, are you willing to embrace violence to not lose that moral battle? And I think that's a very interesting concept always, like, you know, so there's some very interesting concepts here.
So that's what I liked about it. So I think what resonated with me was it tells a very historical story in a very human way. And I think the piece that got me, Yazdi, was, like you said, sometimes you may not necessarily believe in a cause, but something incites you. And I like that one incited the Carey Mulligan character is not what we expect, right? So it's something different that incites her to behave in this way and join this movement. And I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head. I really like the fact that depending on what side of a movement or revolution even that you stand on, the other side will often consider you a criminal or a terrorist.
Right.
And so I think that's what's really clever about this movie, is that it's giving you a historical piece of an event. And because you're on the wrong side of history, i.e. it's happening before we've decided that it made a change, those people are called terrorists. And I agree with you. I think the hard time I have with Carey Mulligan as an actress, and look, there's no doubt that she is an incredible actress. And again, I think she might get maybe some Best Actress nominations here. I never feel like she's acting. She's always that sad, you know, puppy with a tail between its legs character all the time. She does it. She's such a tragic person.
Except when she's delightful.
Well, yes. And she's rarely delightful, right? Because the delightfulness is almost a small reprise from the sadness.
It's the role she's getting off.
Yeah. But
weight of the world.
Yeah, and I think the other thing this did really well is that exploration of a movement being classless and ageless. But I like that it brings together this really good group of women who are from different classes, and they're all different ages, and they're all fighting for the same thing. And I think it did that very powerfully.
Movie's had mixed reviews. I mean, it's just over the line. I think the cutoff for being fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, is it 70% or 60%?
I don't know.
Well, it's running at 72%, and I think the biggest criticism that I can see... I think it's 80%,
I'm sorry, go on.
Well, no, it's still certified fresh at 72, but
okay.
I think that's just over the hurdle. And it seems to me that the biggest criticism is what you said, Yazdi, which is really, you know, well-intentioned, but the strong narrative arc is lacking somehow.
Yeah, it's such a... It's you know, it's a remarkable story. If I read that script, I would say, gosh, somebody should make this movie. But I don't know, maybe it's by the book's kind of treatment of the material.
Is it underdirected, maybe?
No, it's not underdirected. I think there is a coldness about it. I don't know how else to... Did you sense that? I mean, there is...
Yeah, it's clinical is how it's very clinical. I would describe it.
And, you know, like, for example, you know, Carey Mulligan never, ever wants to be a suffragette. She gets pulled into her character gets pulled into this kicking and screaming against her wishes. Yeah, she's a very reluctant hero and reluctant all the way through. But the things which happen to her just seem so over the... Like, you know, her employer, he's not just garden variety evil. He's just like evil, evil. You know, it's not enough that he's, you know, not paying these women well or mistreating them. He also has to, like, you know, be a lech. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure all of those things were true, but there's something about it. And we'll talk about it in relation to another movie later on in this podcast, where some movies you just hug them, and some movies you watch from a distance admiring them. And it's voodoo. I don't know. It's the treatment of the material.
Yeah. So watch it. It lacks emotionality. Yeah. Maybe I think is it's sterile. It doesn't have the emotion.
But there is a certain magic that has to happen. I mean, I recently watched the movie you guys recommended, 2 Days, 1 Night, the Marianne Cotillard movie. And, you know, that movie really does hit you very hard emotionally. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what they did there to do that to me, because as I tried to evaluate what was going on. I wasn't particularly sympathetic to her plight, but nonetheless, the movie very, very much got to me. So
it's interesting you mentioned that. Now I'm trying to think about what's lacking in this. And I think it's the fact that Carey Mulligan's character doesn't really need anyone or anything. That need doesn't come across. And so now when I'm comparing it to other movies that make us feel a certain way, we empathize with a character's need for something.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Good point.
And I also think that Sarah Gavron, who made this movie, maybe she was worried that if she tipped over too much, that it might become overly sentimental. So it's a fine line to watch between being too humdrum and sentimental versus being too clinical. And unfortunately, I think this one tipped over a little bit on the clinical side. But it's still a fine, fine film made with a lot of care. And it has its heart on its sleeve. And it's so well-meaning.
And you can score.
And I would give it a slightly stingy 6 out of 10.
And Rashmi?
Yeah, I think 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. I mean, you know, yes, you said it. Incredibly well made, well acted, well produced. I think it will move you, anger you, or entertain you.
Yeah.
Okay, 2 more movies. We have Legend and Brooklyn. Let's go to
Brooklyn.
So Brooklyn is the story of Ellis Lacey, a young Irish immigrant who's navigating her way through 1950s Brooklyn. The movie stars Saoirse Ronan, Domhnall Gleeson, Jim Broadbent, Julie Walters. It's directed by John Crowley and is penned by Nick Hornby, who we know for About a Boy and
Fever Pitch,
An Education.
So, Wild.
High Fidelity.
And so on. The list goes on. So clearly there's a solid writing team and directing team at the helm of this. So guys, what did you think of Brooklyn?
This is a lovely movie about growing up and most importantly about love, but not in a sappy, pathetic way, but in a way that warms your cockles and makes you smile and lift your spirits. This is so epic and well produced. I had this huge smile on my face leaving the theater, and I think it's got a lot to do with casting, acting, and chemistry, and of course, great direction and a good story.
Yasley?
Yeah, just literally stop what you're doing right now and go watch Brooklyn. It's easily one of the best movies of the year, easily. They just don't make him like that anymore. They do not make a movie which is unabashedly sentimental. It gives melodrama a good name. There's something so old-fashioned about this movie. There is something so generous and hardworking and just open. There's some openness about this movie. It's about a very specific experience that a very specific person in a very specific period of time goes through. And yet it is everybody's story. It's just tremendous. This is an instant classic in my books.
And I made Joe watch the screener for this one.
And I haven't forgiven you yet, because this movie sucked.
No, it did not.
That was good acting.
That was good acting, wasn't it? No, I mean, there's not a lot to add to what you guys have said here. I mean, I think this movie caught me out in the sense of we've become so cynical and looking for kind of constant dark twists and revelations. Yeah. And this movie, I was constantly waiting for something
substantial.
Not just substantial, but something horrible to happen. And it's amazing how, as an audience, we've come to expect that kind of stuff. So when we have something that's so earnest and beautiful as this, it kind of touches you. I mean, I had the disadvantage, actually, of watching this in a slightly distracting home environment, so I didn't get the full-on cinema experience for this. And I think that that the movie did lose a point or two with me personally for that. But it's one that I want to see again with a pair of headphones and a really focused environment without the kitten running around creating havoc. So, I thought this was a beautiful movie. Saoirse Ronan is note perfect here. Yeah. There is not a line that she delivers that doesn't have the depth of acting that you know, and it can be a very simple gestural thing, but it's beautiful. The work she does here is beautiful and lovely. Very well crafted movie.
Yes, you said it. You know, this is a perfectly simple. You know, this is perfectly simple as a story, and I think it doesn't attempt to cover too much, which I think makes it very well paced as a character story. And I think what I kept feeling was it's elegant in the way that the characters are so fully realized. And I was left with this feeling, which I don't often get in the movies, is that there's this whole life that went on before we visited, and there's a whole life that happened after we left the theater, and that that life is going on somewhere. And you don't often feel like you're visiting a world, right, when you go to the movies. And I feel like it goes really deep around expectations, around duty and knowing who we are, and, you know, what happens when you migrate to somewhere else, and knowing your heart, knowing what's right for you. And I haven't seen that done as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the movie, the reason why the movie resonated so much for me is I think anybody who has been through any kind of an immigration experience, most movies about the immigration experience are extreme. They're about things, horrible things happening to people. And nothing really horrible happens to the social own character. I'm not giving anything away. But we live through her pain and we live through her aches because we recognize that I mean, anybody who has written long letters home, you know, and anybody who has been achingly homesick, you know, achingly homesick will recognize things in this movie. And, you know, I think even if you're not an immigrant, everybody feels this tug of what you owe your family and what your family expects from you versus what you want to do. And at no point is there ever any doubt that everybody means well for you, but you still, I think every person as part of their growing up has to fight this battle of who you want to be outside of the ties of what defines you from your family's perspective. And this movie walks this line so beautifully. And I also like that the Saoirse Ronan character she's not like a goody-goody two shoes. I mean, she does towards the end a few things which are completely forgivable, but they are in the moment impetuous. And I don't know. I mean, first of all, you know, remember we were talking about suffragette and why there is a coldness about it. Why is it that, you know, Saoirse Ronan in this movie completely pulls you in when Carey Mulligan couldn't in Suffragette? Now, I don't think that one is a better actor than the other. I think it's in the treatment. It's how it's written and how it's directed. And like you, I mean, I wrote in my notes, like, this is what I wrote. Is this going to be a movie where I watch the entirety with a smile on my face? Mm-hmm. And I did, even when it got pretty serious in the middle. Mm-hmm. I was kind of going through this journey with this person. And there is an authenticity about the movie. It's just amazing.
I would agree with all of that. I mean, I think the middle section for me is where it did kind of click together a little, obviously. You know, I knew where it was going, which is kind of why in this, you know, era of ironic twists and you know, major character changes or something coming in from left field to mix things up, I found the movie oddly kind of, you know, it was very benign in the sense of, you know, I was looking for a little bit more. So in part, I think I was a little disappointed by how gently it told its particular story, but that didn't detract from the overall experience of it. It's just, again, as an audience, I was looking for higher drama, higher amplitude drama. And I think instead we got the emotional arc, but not necessarily the dramatic. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But I think that's intentional.
No, I think absolutely that is intentional. It's just, if I'm honest, that, you know, in my personal taste, I was left feeling just slightly lacking. And again, I don't want to give you the sense that the movie was dull in any way, but it's definitely a softer arc than I'm used to seeing. And remember, I'm there. The more action, action movie minded one of us all.
Yeah. I mean, I got the feeling I got after The Theory of Everything finished. Mm-hmm. It has that loveliness. I don't know how to articulate it, but there was a loveliness about it. And I think the other piece that really impressed me was this is a piece of history of New York itself. Mm-hmm. And it really made me understand community and the immigrant experience in a way that I hadn't appreciated before. So these young girls come over from other countries. They get to stay in a house with an older woman. And Julie Walters was amazing as that older woman. I mean, I'm certainly going to be putting her on my list of best supporting actress. But it really made me understand how communities ended up staying together and how ghettos began in a way.
Yeah. And I think this is based on a very popular book of the same name. It was a novel by Colm Tolbin, and you know, Nick Hornby has adapted it. And I think he's, I think it's quite a tightrope act to make a movie which is authentic. It's not ashamed of being so uncynical, and yet not becoming cheesy or maudlin. Mm-hmm. And it's never cheesy, and it's never maudlin, and it's just so lusciously romantic, which is what I liked. I mean, this is probably the most romantic movie of the year I've seen, other than Far From the Madding Crowd. But you know, the guy she meets in Brooklyn, that guy just, he is open-hearted and he loves her.
He's lovely.
And you don't see, because we are scared to write characters like that in movies, because they'll be like, oh, you know, nobody like that exists.
Or
please give me a break, you know. We are so cynical.
We're always looking for that second dimension.
Yeah, we're like, what's wrong? What's wrong with his story? You know, what is he hiding? And I'm just glad that that character exists who is just simple and who just unequivocally loves her. And that's a thing of beauty.
And he's a great actor. Emery Cohen, who played the character, he was from Place Beyond the Pines. I couldn't recognize where I saw him from.
He was Bradley Cooper's son in Place Beyond. A really different,
really different character. But I was thinking, oh my God, what a sincere performance.
Yeah.
The chemistry was unbelievable between them. Like I had, like the hair on... The hair on my body stood up.
Yeah, it was quite remarkable.
Yeah.
And let's pause for a moment to sing the praises of Saoirse Ronan.
Yes.
I mean, the camera just loves her. The camera's on her face more often than it's not. She's probably in every scene of the movie.
Yes, and big close-ups of her face.
Yeah, and she has these giant liquid gray eyes.
Yeah.
And you can just look right through
and
them.
Her red hair.
Right, and she's not an established film star, right? She's been Oscar nominated once before, but she was in Hannah, you know, she's kind of been on the fringe, but this is her first big kind of starring role where she carries the lead, and she carries the lead magnificently. I mean, there's not even a question about it. She is going to be nominated for Best Actor in a lead role.
Yeah, I mean, this is the actress that I like very much. We saw her very early on in her career, and we thought we saw potential, but then she's had a couple of horrible missteps, including there was this horrible sci-fi film that she
The
was
Giver,
in.
Right?
The Host.
The Host. Yeah.
And, you know, I really felt at the time, you know, girl, you got to be careful about the parts you choose. And this is one, clearly she's taken that advice and run with it. So beautiful.
I mean, remember, she was a kid in Atonement and she stole the
15.
Show.
How old was she? Yeah.
The one thing that this movie also did, I thought that was beautiful, was it didn't demonize the environment from which she ran, if you know what I mean. There was some beautiful moments that in that for me were very impactful when she came to appreciate the place from which she had come. And I think that's always hard. And, you know, again, to your point earlier, Yasti, about the immigration, you do have those nostalgic moments. Even though there were reasons why you left and sought new pastures, there are some beautiful moments in this movie which create that character's pull, you know, that you're almost torn between two places.
Yeah, Joe and I talk about this all the time. I think the three of us always talk about this all the time because we are immigrants, right? We've had that immigrant experience, but yeah, it's handled so delicately.
I mean, like you said, Joe, it's to the movie's great credit that it does not make a villain out of anybody. There isn't a villain in this entire movie. I mean, the choice she has to make in the end, it's a very believable choice. I think a lesser movie would have made... Well, these are the bad people, and here is, you know, the good stuff, but she cannot pursue the good stuff because she's duty bound to the bad people. It's never that. Everybody means well for her, and, you know, she just has to make that step, you know, this direction or that direction. And you can feel, I felt her difficulty with making that choice, and I think that's quite something else. There's a scene late in the movie where the simple act of her, she gets a letter. And she takes that letter and she puts it in the drawer. And when I was watching it in the theater, everybody gasped. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
And it's so beautifully done and you're so invested in the story that the simple act of somebody putting a letter in a drawer.
Without reading it.
Yes, that's important. Without reading the letter, she puts it in the drawer. That drew a gasp from the audience. And that speaks to how well it's been done and how invested you are. I think we should... before we drool over this more, we should wrap it up.
And I think, you know, Joe, I think you made a really good point, which is if you can see this in the cinema, please watch this in the cinema. This is beautiful to look at on the big screen. Okay, Riazdi, you go first.
You know, this movie is about a very specific experience, but it's also about bigger issues. It's about growing up, about making peace with where you came from and where you currently are at. And I think who cannot, you know, empathize with that? You know, what can I say? I want to hug this movie and I want to hug it and I want to hug it. It's one of the best movies of the year. Like I said, an instant classic in my books. 8.5 out of 10, which I'm going to be a little Grinch and I'm going to back down to 8.
Why?
It should get a 9, but I'm going to give it an
8. Why? Why not the 9?
No,
what stops you?
No, I just don't hand out the 9s willy-nilly. But it's a lovely movie. Joe. It's probably a 9.
I'm glad you weren't grading my papers at school. That's all I can say. This is a beautiful movie. It's not going to get a 9 from me either, but that's because it's not my particular flavor of things, and that's not to knock the movie, but that's just a taste thing. But I did like this movie an awful lot. I think it's beautiful, and I think Saoirse Ronan is just mesmerizing here. It's a wonderfully nuanced performance here that she does both physically, you know, non-verbally, but also through dialogue. And, you know, there's never a sense of what this character is thinking, despite the fact that a lot is told through dialogue. You're always in her mindset. And I think that deserves a lot of credit here for the actress. So I'm going to give it an 8. It's a solid 8. It's an 8 plus, but it's not a 9.
Damn you both. 9.
Humbug.
I'm giving it right out. Look, this is a stunningly sweet and romantic movie that is just perfect to watch when you've had a bad day. Hell, every day. While it won't make you laugh as such, it will lift your spirits and heat your heart. I love this movie. I love this movie. One of the best movies of the year.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it. Love, 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 love. Love.
Get it, I get it. So let's move on then to our third movie of the week, which is Legend.
So Brian Helgeland, who famously wrote and directed LA Confidential and was also involved as a writer for Mystic River and Robin Hood, directs the movie Legend, which features a double performance from one of our favorite actors, Mr. Tom Hardy. And the film tells the story of identical twins who were mobsters, Reggie and Ronnie Cray. And they were two of the most feared mobsters in British history. And they led quite a charge of fear through most of London in the 60s. And it's their story. And the movie stars Tom Hardy, as I said, in a double role, as well as Emily Browning, as well as Taron Egerton, who we had seen earlier this year in Kingsman. I have the screener for this movie. It's one of 5 other movies I'm dying to watch, and I hope to watch it.
To influence Yazdi's watching habit now.
Yes. So should I move that to the top? You're the only one who's seen it, Joe. Both of you have seen it.
So, 2 things to say about this movie. Tom Hardy was brilliant in this movie. And
when is he not?
Tom Hardy was not so good in this movie. Oh. It's a really strange thing. There are 2 characters portrayed here. One of them is, he plays it very straight. It's a very good gangster role. Ronnie Cray. The other, Reggie Cray, is obviously a person who had some flaws. He was psychotic. I mean, I think that's well established. But for the whole length of the movie, I couldn't escape the fact that Tom Hardy was having a bit of a laugh with this character, and I don't think that was intentional, but it was really odd to see him struggle with the role of the thuggish, slightly mentally ill Reggie Cray, because I found it really hard to buy, and it was so distracting. Overall, though, the movie, you know, it's a reasonable portrayal of, you know, 1960s era gangster London. Nothing spectacular about it. Nothing new that we haven't seen before. It's, you know, it's gangsters and thugs and so on. But the performance by the Hardy was both mesmerizing and distracting.
Okay, so I was really looking forward to this movie because I'm super impressed with Tom Hardy and the chameleon that he is, and I wanted to see how different he could make the two roles. So I think you summed it up really, really well. I think overall I wasn't disappointed by this, but I was hoping for more depth. I like that the story of these crazy, dangerous, and violent brothers was anchored by a love story, but overall I'm disappointed because it came off a little too light considering the subject matter. I suppose I was hoping for more of a Black Mass type treatment, given how violent and crazy these guys were. It was just a little bit strange in tone for me.
Does it have a good story arc, or it kind of just says this is how they lived and that's about it?
It tells a story. Is that arc good? Probably not as interesting as you'd want it to be. And I think that's, again, that's a partly missed opportunity here. I think they were so focused on, giving us the difference between these twin brothers, that was the element of the story that they decided to focus on. But it was just so odd when, you have like one Tom Hardy that's brilliant and the other one that constantly just talks through his teeth all the time, like he's really angry, and it's just I almost wish they'd made the choice to use two actors, in part because you could also see those slightly cheesy camera placement tricks where, again, it was so off-putting because you know that this is one actor, and as a directorial choice, it's really frustrating to see one character talking to the other where you can only see one face constantly.
Well, the back of a head.
Back of a head, yeah. So,
So not rush out and watch.
I'm not going to blast this movie. I did find it very entertaining from start to finish. It's just not a great gangster movie. And I think what you need for, a good gangster movie is, some sort of level of danger. I mean, even the dangerous scenes were not particularly tense. It lacked a lot of kind of overall sense of, you knew that there was going to be violence, but the violence was...
comical almost.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a tonality issue. Mm. The movie feels like it's playing it straight with a kind of a wink.
Yeah, it's got this beautiful production, and I think the time is captured beautifully, and it's got this great 60s soundtrack, the lovely costume. There's this real texture of the 60s. Not as good as Man from U.N.C.L.E., which we talked about earlier in the year, which we all loved. But it's just too light. I mean, I think, Hardy's working really hard in the movie, And he does do a good job of convincing us that it is two separate characters. But the person that impressed me the most was Emily Browning, who plays his wife, who plays Ronnie's wife. Okay. And she's really narrates the movie. It's really the movie from her point of view, which is why I say it's kind of anchored in this love story. She's the standout for me in this movie, I think. But I think tonality is the problem. I mean, at times it felt a little Goodfellas, but it's not as polished or smart.
Well, they wanted to give us that, deep dive into, 1950s, 1960s era gangland London. But, there wasn't enough plot there.
Yeah.
There was not the kind of the gangster thread. I mean, there were some issues about, power and trying to take control, but you never really got the sense that this was some big crime empire. It all felt very mom and pop shop, and that I think the movie wasn't ambitious enough in the sense of it wasn't trying to give us that. It was focusing very much on these two brothers and their dynamic and their dysfunction and at times.
Yeah.
But also their inherent love. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I'll start summing up. So overall, it's a very good imagining of these two infamous brothers, but a little tonally inconsistent and too light for my liking, although it's entertaining and very watchable. I mean, I think 6 out of 10.
And 6 is where I'm going to leave it too. That's generous, though. I can't hide my disappointment. I think, I was really looking forward to this particular movie being, a very everything that Black Mass wasn't, I wanted to see here. I think the build up to it was very good, and the potential for an actor of the caliber of Tom Hardy to do this work was good. But I think it was a little bit of a misstep directionally. So 6 out of 10.
Okay.
All right. So let's wrap up our podcast for today. Mail at movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers, facebook.com/movierollers as well. We do Facebook and tweet, and we are we would love to get some viewer correspondence. So let us know what you think of the show. Until our next podcast, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.